gone to the way it was before. The spaces won't be spaces anymore. Now the spaces won't be spaces anymore.
Calvert County has a transferable development rights program, and it is frequently held up in planning circles as an example to the nation. As a jurisdiction, I think there's something like 9th or 14th countrywide in land preservation. So land is scarce. I mean, Calvert County is only 140,000 acres, period. And already we've preserved over 22,000 acres. Mostly in farmland, farm and forest. It's been perpetually preserved in a variety of these kinds of programs. The TDR program encourages preservation of the countryside or maintenance of the countryside as rural, as undeveloped, and encourages the concentration of development in the town centers. And that was the way it was envisioned to work in the first place. And we're all winners in the long run because that countryside is preserved and ways of life presumably, along with it. The details of the ways of life are changing. Obviously, people are moving from tobacco into other things. But the focus on agricultural pursuits is still alive. We're not seeing the end of agriculture along with the end of tobacco.
I'll tell you one thing, I never thought I would see this much traffic in Calvert County. I really didn't. I remember one time, I caught my wife in that house there. I met my wife and her mother and her father, who live here, and her sister. And I left from over there to come here, and I believe I sat for 5 minutes just across the road. It's a fact.
Not everybody is moving wholeheartedly into a whole new agricultural operation. I certainly see a lot of our younger farmers are doing that. Some of our older farmers are closer to retirement, or they're at a stage in their life where they're physically not capable of continuing in agriculture. For them, their agricultural efforts might be more minimal.
Most of these guys, you know, are not farming. They've quit.
I got a just to seed the land every year. You put something on the land. I mean, you can grow anything you want. You can put tomatoes or corn or anything on it. But I just going to plow it up and reseed it over again. Feed the deer. There's plenty of them. They need some meat.
When you're 62, you're not looking very far ahead. But the younger farmers, the few that we have, are working on ways to continue to farm. And that's a small percentage. I mean, but we knew that going in.
It broke my heart the first year. The number of people who came in literally wringing their hands saying, I don't know what I'm going to do. Almost with tears in their eyes saying, I don't know what I'm going to do. I don't know that I want to give up tobacco. I'm losing the market. We're very, very concerned that if the buyout takes a hold, we'll lose the rest of the existing market that's here because there won't be the production to support the warehouses.
Lord, when I call on you and I want you to hear me, I am troubled down here. Oh, when I call on you and I want you to hear me. Oh, I am troubled down here.
Well, from the standpoint of a grower who was 65 years old, 55 years old, 70 years old, this was the goose that laid the golden egg, because the state Maryland said, you can take some of this master settlement agreement money in exchange for not raising tobacco. And this is exactly what farmers said to me. I don't want to raise tobacco 10 more years when I can get this payment. You know, I'm old. You know, my back hurts. And the wife is telling me, you know, she wants you to quit working like a dog.
Ooh, I am troubled down.
And it's very hot, and it's very dirty work, because there's a great deal of tar on tobacco, which gets all over you, which makes the sand stick to you, and the whole business is, I think, hot and hateful, actually.
I can remember I used to be in the field cutting tobacco and spearing tobacco. And the man farm that we lived on, his house was up on a high hill and had a bunch of shade trees around his house, and it was always cool up here. Seneca breeze would always be blowing. We were down in that field, 110 degrees out there. And he would be sitting up on those little trees, looking down his field at us through his binoculars. I used to hate that. And I made a promise to myself that when I got out of high school, I was going to get off that white man's farm. And I did. I graduated in June 54. In July, I was gone. I was in the Air Force. I went in the Air Force. Daddy didn't want me to go, but Mom signed the papers, so I left.
I mean, it's drudgery. The farming population producing tobacco.
They review the contract and agree to the terms. What the contract binds them to is forevermore, the rest of their lives, they're out of tobacco. They themselves can never produce tobacco.
And you can never grow it again. You can't grow it. You can't help nobody. You can't rent your barn to nobody to hang it in. You can't do nothing in tobacco once you take tobacco.
You couldn't go and help a friend strip?
No, sir. Nope. You can't do nothing.
I am troubled down here.
Once you take the buyout, you're not supposed to have any other contact with the crop. As harsh as that sounds, you know, you couldn't help it. Your brother, your neighbor, your sons. Because we just felt, you know, to keep the integrity of the program, because if I was getting the buyout and my brother didn't, and people driving up and down the road see me out in the field helping him, it wouldn't look, you know, it would look like I was still in the tobacco business. And that was a pretty contentious point in the beginning. Farmers really had a hard time with that, because farmers generally like to help each other. And, you know, even though I took the buyout, if my neighbor was in trouble one day, you know, I'd want to help him out.
Well, I didn't sign up for it. So many of them did to pay you for 10 years, not to raise the back. But now look, after 10 years, what you got? You ain't got nothing to make enough more. Because if the government got in charge, you can't put enough more no more than what they want you to put on your land. I'm going to tell you what you can raise on and what you can't. See? Ain't no good. That's why people selling their property.
I don't know what SL's decided, but of course, you know, I mean, I know he hadn't taken it yet. I don't know what he's going to do. You know, he's young and he wants to farm, and forever is a long time, you know. So those last few people, you know, in my mind are the younger ones that are just debating what to do.
I'm 30 years old right now. If I take it next year, my money runs out when I'm 40, and I hope to live longer than 40. That's how the buyout works. With my wife going back to work, I'm thinking very seriously about continuing to raise some more, at least until the market goes. And hopefully by then, my wife will be a nurse, and she can stop us from starving to death, and I can continue to farm.
It was never assumed that I would have anything to do with the farm. I was taught to embroider and wore fluffy dresses with big sashes on the back, and just assumed I would grow up and be a little Miss Priss. I didn't quite make it. Actually, what happened I was married. My husband had hurt his back and could practically not move. It was springtime, and he should have been plowing. And I kept looking at that tractor down there in that field. And I decided, I can do this. So I did. And once I saw that dirt roll behind me, I knew I didn't want to do any more embroidery.
Elevating is wonderful to me. You can roll along pretty good with a two-row cultivator. And I love to do that. I mean, it's just such beautiful work. And you see every plant. You're sitting right there on top of it. And you see, damn, old John missed that plant. He must have been asleep. You know, a cutworm got that one, or a deer cut it off. You know.
I love to use farm equipment, too. We've still got the bike at a strip, but I'm chomping at the bit to get behind the steering wheel of a tractor, so. And I guess it's being your own boss, too. You don't have nobody telling you what to do.
I used to have at least two big loads of tobacco. And I mean strip most of all myself, two big truckloads. Huh? Sit in there and strip. Strip. Nighttime, I always lights on my strip.
Did you sing while you worked?
Huh?
Did you sing while you worked?
I ain't had time to sing. Well.
My name is Elmer Michael. I was born in Calhoun County. My mother's name is Rosa Michael, and I was a musician ever since I was 5 years old. My mother, she was a gospel singer. She had 17 hidden kids. And this is them all just by herself. When I got up to 7, 8 years old, I used to work for down half a day, cutting tobacco. After the tobacco was cured, and we take it out of the bone, pull it off, and strip it, and tie it bung up. All of us used to get together and do some singing. And you're talking about singing, they could sing. You know, I try to live the best in service, and I try to do the best I can. Oh, when I choose to do the right thing, evil pressed on every hand, and I looked up and I wonder why. You know the good fortune passing me by. Then I said to my soul, don't you worry, the Lord will make a way somehow. Don't you know the Lord will make a way somehow, Lord, when we need the cross abound. Then he will take away his soul and let him have better now. Only when the load be down so heavy, you know the weight is all upon my bow. Then I said to my soul, don't you worry, the Lord will make a way somehow.
I don't want to do this winter. That was my hobby, just go down the barn, sit in the barn, and all the winter strip. I don't want to do this winter.
I still enjoy the farm. Gives me a place to go to sort of hide a little bit. And this place, I enjoy it. It's just part of my life, that's all. I'll never take the bayou. And I don't want anyone to say to this old boy that you can't do something for the rest of your life. So I'm out.
I think that's unconstitutional. I'm not a lawyer, and I know they got smart lawyers, and nobody would have the money to fight them anyway. But, you know, if I went to court and you were the judge and you passed a life sentence on me, the first thing I'd do is appeal it.
There was a lot of anger in the community when this was first proposed, when the buyout was first proposed. A lot of people who said, we don't think the state has any right to come in and tell us what we can and can't do. I'm very appreciative of the fact that it is a voluntary program, and that's why, from my perspective, I've always said, I won't try to sway anybody one way or the other. It's voluntary. If you choose it, we'll help you.
One of the big problems I have with it is I'm not going to sign a life sentence on myself. I'm not going to say that I'm only going to live for 10 years and take the money and run. And I wouldn't be able to help my grandson if he did decide to farm, not even by talking to him how to do it. You couldn't put your hands on it for the rest of your life. And I found that very hard to swallow and still do.
We were overwhelmed, to be honest. Although it was a voluntary program, and although there were a lot of people who didn't support the idea of the buyout, 60 or 70% of the farmers signed up for the buyout in that very first year. And that was sort of unanticipated.
No, I don't blame them for taking it. That's their decision. I wouldn't criticize anyone for taking it.
The third part of the program has been to try to help farmers find other alternatives and develop some of the skills that they need as they transition out of tobacco into a different market-driven economy than tobacco.
There's no alternative.
There are things to do. You just have to get out and look for them and find that little niche and go on.
The most economical thing or the highest price thing would be marijuana, but so far that's illegal. So. Other than marijuana, there's nothing that's going to replace tobacco for return per acre.
There's a number of different things that people are doing. Greenhouse, horticulture, bedding plants, cut flower production. Some of the farms have kind of embraced that and increased their capacity to do horse boarding. And it's something that there's more potential to get into. Supportive of that is the whole hay production area. There's an incredible demand for hay and straw.
When the buyout did come, it was like, oh, hay. I need to do this because I need to find another way to make a living on this farm. So that money financed my hay equipment. So it came at just the right time for me.
And the good thing is with the buyout, when I was growing tobacco, we knew the end was coming, but it was hard to develop a new enterprise because we spent all our time growing tobacco. We're not making a living yet doing this. And without the buyout, we couldn't do it.
What else are you going to do unless you have equipment or the knowledge of knowing how to raise or do something else? So I think Maryland's very fortunate in the farmers in that we do have the buyout. And I was like, okay, I'm going to take the money while it's there before someone else gets it, and why shouldn't I get it? And this farm certainly should get some money from the tobacco, from what the farm has done for the tobacco industry. So I think it's a good thing for Maryland. We're fortunate to have the money. But like I said, if the farmers want to still raise the tobacco, my hat's off to them.
As I say, for me, what was so exciting to come into this program was the opportunity to work and help people move into other things that might be lucrative and that might help make them a better income over the long haul. There's no state in the entire United States that has offered a buyout. So Maryland is unique and has sort of stepped out on its own to try to help farmers move into something else.
They should have given them the money and let them go on ahead and raise the tobacco, and it would have died its own death because of lack of labor and the poor market prices.
They could probably have saved themselves some money, because it was going to phase out anyway, I believe.
With science, they figured out how to make that tobacco burn, and they really don't need, you know, Maryland tobacco. So, you know, we were getting near the end no matter what we decided to do.
Before 83, they were growing close to 40 million pounds here in southern Maryland. Now we're down to 3, and you got to really hunt to find them 3 million. Most of that's coming from the Amish.
The major portion of tobacco is raised by the Amish and the Mennonites. And thank goodness for them in my particular case, because I guess 60% of that tobacco out there on the floor is Amish.
And the warehouse operators are concerned because they have lost their livelihood as a result of the buyout, or they're losing their livelihood as a result of the buyout because that's what they've done.
I guess it's a very selfish viewpoint, but I was so upset that our ex-governor and his policies on farm and agriculture. I just love to see it backfire so bad. I just love to see tobacco hold on. It's been here since 1634. So the state of Maryland was spending millions upon millions of dollars in economic development trying to attract any kind of new business into your area. But they killed the oldest industry, established industry that didn't cost anybody anything. Kill it with a stroke of a pen. So I'd like to see it survive. A lot of people say it's never going to survive.
The governor wanted to get rid of tobacco. He didn't succeed. It'll never be completely gone, I don't think, because as long as there's a market of any kind, be it the auction, it may go to contract basis, I think tobacco will be raised because it is a very profitable crop.
To be honest, I really haven't missed it very much. I miss the way it was 25 years ago when you felt like the market was going to be good, you felt like you're going to have enough help. But it is still funny because there are things that become so much a part of what you do. If I close my eyes, I could very clearly visualize a row of tobacco and spearing it, for instance. And it would take me about 5 or 10 minutes to get back in the rhythm of throwing tobacco on a stick. And even though up in the barn I wasn't as quick or as agile as I was when I was 20, I could just move around the top of the barn just, you know, I know where everything is. You know, you don't put a foot wrong because you've just done this.
Some of them wouldn't tell you that now, they will miss it, but they'll miss it. There'll be certain aspects of it they don't miss, but they'll miss it. They've been doing it ever since they were 6 or 7 years old. At that time, the tobacco here in Maryland was planted by hand. The first thing they'd done was drop the plants on the hill for the elders to plant. When they got big enough to do it, they started planting them and somebody else dropped them on the hill. They'll miss it.
The dreams of the farmer rest with the rain that was never enough. Whenever it came and we'd watch the sky, but you'd watch in vain at our old home. But when years were good, it was worth all the pain, and we'd thank the Lord again and again for the fish in the river, the falling rain at our old home. At our old home, at our old home, at the house by the river, at our old home.
I miss my money from my crop, honey. I used to have at least 2 big loads of tobacco.
But yet, still I like food. I just love it. And I look at people back and I, Lord, I wish I had worked in back of the year. I still want to farm. Be heard of old people say, grow it up in your blood, I guess. Hard to get rid of it. Yeah, I love farm. I like to work. I really work and being as you're doing nothing, and I figure you work, you live long. That's fact. I figured if I believe you work, you live long.
I'm going to work long as God let me live and able to get around.
I think it's a very fascinating time in the history of Southern Maryland. Not since the advent of the settlers on this land, the colonists who came here, have we seen such a change in the culture and society of Southern Maryland. And I think your project was just absolutely fascinating. And I think for you to capture some of those changes, particularly now as they're happening, will be very rewarding. And I think will be interesting as we go through time to look back and see what has happened here in Southern Maryland.
Now time and the river, they have their worth. And a man is given a great wide berth, but then he must pay his debt to the earth and go on home. Now trees are coming down for the things they plan, and the plow must bow to change on the land, and nothing is left where the past used to stand at our old home, at our old home, at our old home.
us by the river at our old home.
You've been listening to the voices of James W. Diggs, Helen Gray, Lindsay Reed, Franklin Wood, S. L. Brady, David Conrad, Dr. Christine Bergmark, Kirsty Unala, John Prouty, Butch Cantor, Buddy Bowling, Judy Levitt, Buddy Hance, and Brother Elmer Makel. The auctioneer, Walter Wilkerson, sold tobacco for 40 years on the floor of the Hughesville Auction House. Musical performances were by Phil Wiggins, David Norris and Terry Nevins, Blue Highways, John Gorka, Lindsay Reed, and Brother Elmer Makel. Born and Raised in Tobacco Fields is a production of Talking Across the Lines, LLC, at historic St. Mary's City. It was written by Carrie Noble Klein and Adam Nordell, edited and produced by Michael Klein. This production is based on field recordings conducted by the Kleins in 2003 for the Calvert County Historic District Commission. For further information on Talking Across the Lines productions, visit our website at folktalk.org. That's www.folktalk.org. For Talking Across the Lines, this is Michael Klein. 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50, 50,